This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. If you've lived around here long enough, it still might be a surprise for you to walk into the local grocery store and see sushi available at the deli counter. The Ozarks and sushi have not always been close companions. Rose Bunch grew up around here, in and around Elkins, and her family has long ties to even smaller towns in the region, like Wesley and Kingston. She has since studied and taught at Virginia, Florida State, and other locations, but on her return trips to where she grew up, she sees the subtle and not-so-subtle changes and uses those observations in her fiction and nonfiction. Her short stories and essays have been published in Tin House, the Greensboro Review, and other publications. In her short story, Sustainability, a young couple, natives to the Ozarks, meet new neighbors from the suburbs who take exception to some of the longtime residents' behavior, including shooting kerosene-soaked balloons with a crossbow. Rose Bunch is in town briefly before beginning a Fulbright Fellowship in Indonesia later this week, and we invited her to talk about her work, her experiences growing up here, and how Indonesia and the Ozarks have a common bond that she'll explore during her Fulbright.
People often ask, you know, what's the link between Arkansas and Indonesia? Well, for me, it was growing up in a remote rural area that was relatively isolated, geographically so, economically so as well, where you have a culture that's preserved, right? And then you have sudden economic growth. And culture becomes more of an artifact, more of something we see that's packaged. And then there's also the, you know, the benefits of that growth, as well as, you know, growing pains associated with losing that culture and the dissolution of it. But I sought to find a way to link the growth in Northwest Arkansas with so many of the companies that have international ties that have literally defined globalism for us, such as Walmart. They've helped, you know, create, you know, this the entire concept of global commerce, and look at countries that were major manufacturing bases for Walmart. So you have China, you have Mexico, the Philippines, and Indonesia are their four top manufacturing bases. And I would have to be fluent in Chinese to apply for a Fulbright there. And I thought, you know, Bali sounds really cool, and I was interested. That's an island within, you know, the vast collection of islands that compose Indonesia that has such a heavily culture and arts and tradition-focused system. Each village maintains a certain, they may have done the same thing for 700 years, whether it be wood carving or weaving or whatever. And I was interested to see how they were able to preserve that with the influx of tourism and with the influx of international manufacturing. And so that's the tie-in. I wanted to see how, you know, a really remote area was transformed by international commerce and tourism, and relate it to how a really remote area, Northwest Arkansas, was transformed by international commerce itself.
Tyson, Walmart.
Right, Tyson and Walmart.
You grew up in and around near Elkins?
Yes.
Small town now, but smaller and seemingly more removed.
Yes, at that time.
When you were a child? Yeah.
Even though I went to junior high and high school in Fayetteville, it still was very much removed in that sense. But I also have, my family comes from Kingston, Arkansas, and the Huntsville area, and Wesley. And so, you know, my grandmother's house was 20 miles of back roads to get to every weekend. And so it's not really Elkins, per se, that I write about. It's more Washington, Madison, Newton County areas that I was very familiar with from just going there frequently.
I grew up in a small town in north central Arkansas. I'm only a few years older than you, but you knew if you lived, whether it was in Lakeview or Kingston or Huntsville, before cable had really penetrated rural parts of the state, before the internet certainly, you knew you weren't part of the fast-paced world.
Right.
You were, if not disconnected, you were apart.
Your clothes were 10 years behind. Your music was 10 years behind. Your haircut, everything about you said Rube when you went to town. And I remember, actually, the first time someone called me a Rube, I did not know what it meant. And I had to, I said something nasty back to them because I could tell that they meant it in a bad way, whatever the word meant. And then I went home and looked it up, and I was so ashamed because I thought, yes, I'm a Rube. If I don't know the definition, then yes, I'm a Rube. You're correct.
How did you realize or self-identifying yourself as a Rube, how did that develop in you as a writer?
Well, what's interesting about, you know, claiming your rudeness, we'll put it that way, is that it enables you to, especially, I'm an academic as well. You know, I went to school at the University of Virginia for my bachelor's and then wound up at Montana for my MFA and now finishing up at Florida State for my PhD. So I've been around now. I know what rude means, amongst other things. And it gave me a lens to turn around and view the work, the places I write about in such a way that I think has more generosity towards the characters and the places they come from than someone who just floats in and decides, I'm going to write about a remote area in the Ozarks. And so using my experiences outside of the Ozarks, I'm able to come back and write about the past and the history and the places here. And what I see as far as the transition, you know, kind of like if it were a tectonic plate, I see the past, Arkansas's past and culture, you know, meeting with the homogenization of the entire United States as we know it.
The short story, Sustainability, the narrator celebrates and claims her rudeness.
Yes, yeah.
Shooting a crossbow. And
But she's not ignorant.
No.
And so that's one of the things that I'm still find myself defending continually is people make the mistake of associating someone being a rube with being ignorant. And some of the qualities that I so admire from my own family, from my own personal history and past have to do with that culture and with the dramatic storytelling ability that you know, I grew up around, verbal, you know, storytelling. But I have to defend that repeatedly in academia. I try and coax friends to come visit Arkansas. You know, I'm like, come hang out in Fayetteville with me. And they, I don't know what they're thinking, the Beverly Hillbillies or what. But
still. In 2010.
Still. I send them photographs. I say, look, this is me drinking a martini at a bar. They have those here.
Air conditioning. And
air conditioning. And, you know, I don't know why. That can't get them to come.
In that wonderful short story, Sustainability.
I'm glad you like
it. Oh, yeah. And there is the scene early when the narrator and her husband have decided to have some fun. You know, they've taken some tequila shots. They have the crossbow out.
Sure.
And they have these balloons that are filled with propane and soaked in kerosene that they're trying to shoot out of the air.
Right.
And they're not drunk.
No.
They're just having a new neighbor across the way comes over and asks them to stop because he's worried.
Right. New neighbor from Indiana.
From Indiana.
Suburban Indiana.
And he's bothered by the fact that this, we should say also, the protagonist of the story owns a mule named General Lee. Was this meeting between the suburban Indiana new neighbor and the folks that have lived in the rural Ozarks who are watching it change around them, was this inspired by any sort of real-life incident?
Continual real-life incidents. People are startled, I own a gun, for example. And they act like you've brought out a bazooka or something. If you have, I have this beautiful Browning 22 with a telescopic sight on it, you know. It's not hanging in the back of my Volvo, you know. it's a gun. It's not going to jump out of the closet and get you. But a lot of folks that aren't from rural backgrounds or that are especially with the academic set, I should say, find many of my stories remarkably bizarre, as if it were something out of a film. And I could tell anyone here. I could tell you. And it wouldn't be such a big deal. Yes, I own a gun. Yes, I like to shoot things with it sometimes. No, I'm not really a hunter, but I would take a flaming arrow crossbow and shoot at propane-filled balloons. I would do that. That's how stupid I am, you could say. But that's just good times. But there's such a high safety factor, you know, that suburban people raised in suburban areas and maybe some urban areas. And that's, you know, overlooking some of the more dangerous crime areas, of course. But a lot of my classmates won't, I call them classmates, I've been in school forever, you know, because I'm a grad student, won't do things, I think, that sound dangerous. Like a lot of them would not take up the crossbow with the flaming arrow and shoot a balloon, you know, or even go sea kayaking. you know, some of them are like, that's crazy. But I think we see this with more and more kids. Their entertainment, I'm making some broad generalization here, but their entertainment seems to be just like, you know, let's say a kid in Elkins, Arkansas, will be doing the exact same thing to entertain himself as a kid in Detroit or a kid in Miami. You know, video games, the same music, the same everything. And there's this evening out of what people do and a lack of creativity, if you ask me. Because growing up in the country, you have to be creative as far as how to amuse yourself. Before we had cable, before we had video games, before we all did essentially the exact same thing on our Saturday nights, we had to be creative.
What about the story Indigenous? Tell me about that.
Well, that is actually, the physical location is set on my family's farm, which kind of straddles the Madison County, Washington County line. And I thought about, and that house is a real house. And so, you know, I imagine myself sitting on that front porch of that house looking out over the valley. And you can see the lights of Fayetteville growing stronger every year. For my whole, you know, we've had it since I was 7 years old. And I thought about that, and I thought, you know, when you're looking to step up the stakes in a story, I thought, let's take somebody who's lived there their whole life, it's their family's farm, and let's have someone on a neighboring, you know, neighboring farm, let's have someone buy a nice big lot there and build a fancy modern house. And this happens over and over again. And so we have an architect from Chicago who comes in, sets up, you know, his home there, builds this fantastic home, and he can see the wood smoke from that house, or smell it anyway, from his own front porch, and his wife leaves him for that neighbor. And I thought, that is, you know, how much more can I increase the stakes there? But then I threw in the emu. And the emu, we actually had emus running loose on our land. So, you know, this comes from just sitting on that front porch. An emu would randomly appear, you know, on the edge of a field. There was a pair of them. Because do you recollect the emu craze?
Oh, yes. Did a couple of stories about it.
Sure.
You bet.
And everybody, you know, was going to make a killing off emu musk and oil and eggs.
Meat. You bet.
And that didn't happen. And so what happened with a lot of people is they would think, okay, I'm done with this place or moving on. And they would just open their gate and let the emus. They wouldn't know what to do with the emus. And the emus would just kind of wander free. And they wound up, you know, free ranging on our land for a while. I'm sure someone shot them. Yeah. I know it wasn't us, but I'm sure someone, for their own amusement, you know, shot the emus. But I thought about, you know, this character. He feels invaded by the changing landscape of Northwest Arkansas and by all the people coming from all over the country. And not only that, he loses his wife to this invasion. And then he has the physical presence of a foreign bird, you know,
right,
on his land.
Non-native, yeah.
Yeah, a non-native bird. So I just conflated all those things to try and construct a story from it.
What I love about your writing, because clash of cultures is such an interesting topic, mm-hmm. be it the growth of Northwest Arkansas or be it in New York City.
Historically, that's where
exactly.
Some of my favorite literature has arisen from.
But you do it in a very subtle way. I mean, there are these sort of gigantic moments in the stories, but you don't seem to go over the top with the clash of cultures. I mean, you don't have these violent eruptions between people. It's things that people notice and just the little parts of their lives that are being kind of just chipped, or not even chipped away, but just sort of slowly rubbed away.
Well, that's the way things happen, you know. And so I want the stories, I want the novel I'm working on as well to be reflective of the way things genuinely happen, which is, you know, you find yourself being taken in bits and pieces, you know, rather than all at once. Your culture, your idea of yourself, your wife, your, you know, land, whatever that is, your husband. And so I want to illustrate that versus, I guess my writing isn't reflective of, you know, other genres where you have some grand moment, you discover that, yes, indeed, you know, the baseball coach was the murderer or whatever, in chapter 8.
Yeah.
And then you have two chapters to wind things down or whatever. But I don't know how to write like that. And there is a place for that. It's just not as interesting for me to create.
Rose Bunch is a native of Elkins and will this week begin her journey to Indonesia as a Fulbright Fellow. Her short story Sustainability can be found in the latest issue of Tin House, and her short story Indigenous is in the spring 2010 issue of the Greensboro Review. You can learn more about her and her fiction and nonfiction at rosebunch.com and hear more from our conversation at ozarksatlarge.com.